Hi, my name's Courtney Thorpe, and welcome to More Than Just a Mum.
My crew very quickly disappeared. I found it really hard to bond.
Don't go to the gym, just have a sleep.
On this week's episode of More Than Just a Mum, I am joined by the lovely Monique Harding. She is a psychotherapist with a focus on relationships. Monique, hello.
Hi, Courtney. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Now, this is super special for me because, to give a bit of background, I've been seeing you for coming up to a year.
Yeah, it's probably been about a year.
So to actually have you here after all the help that you've given me over the last 12 months and knowing that you're going to be able to help some of the listeners is so special.
Oh, that's very sweet of you to say. I'm more than happy to come and share some of my, hopefully, expertise.
Oh, definitely expertise. Monique, tell me a little bit about your family life, because obviously you're an amazing therapist, but you're also a mum.
Yeah, I've got two little minis. So my little girl is 4.5 and my little boy is 11 months. We're coming up to the big 3. That definitely plays a key part in, you know, who I am, how I engage in therapy, people who are typically attracted to working with me.
Because you come from a mum's perspective, do you think?
I think so, yeah. That motherhood role is one of those roles where you don't know until you know, right?
Like, oh my God, yes.
You can predict how it's going to be and, you know, you take on board all of the advice, but until you're actually living it, I don't think anyone really understands like how deep a growth journey it truly is.
No one can prepare you for motherhood.
Absolutely.
No one.
Yeah.
Totally. Even other mothers.
Yeah, agree.
Nothing we can say that will prepare those that are about to become mums, unfortunately. You'll have to learn the hard way. But it's magical.
Yes.
Now, I have some really specific things that I wanted to talk to you about today, not only sort of based on what you and I have actually spoken about over the last 12 months and the issues that I've lived, but also some that people have been reaching out to me about, and I don't have the answers, and I know you will. So I suppose the overall questions I have for you today are surrounding exactly what we were just talking about: becoming a mom, being a wife, still being a woman, and everything that comes along with it. So let's dive right in.
Sounds great.
Before partners, you know, married or de facto or whatever, have a baby, is there anything that can be done to prepare them for what's about to change in their lives?
Absolutely.
Yes. But I wish I knew that. I might be in a whole different situation.
I think there's so much change that happens during that pregnancy journey that often the birth of the baby tends to take up a lot of the focus from the couple, right? Preparing for the birth, hypnobirthing classes, calm birthing classes, going to obstetrician, midwife appointments. So you come together on that piece typically fairly well in most of the couples that I support. But what's really missing is that next piece of, well, what is life actually going to be like for us after this? And how are things really going to change?
Yeah.
Because a really key component of successful relationships is this idea of shared dreams, you know, where we're working together towards something. We have these shared goals, this shared vision for our life.
Yep.
And often when we're in that courting kind of stage and we're before
the butterflies.
Yeah, before we become a family, right? Like, you're dating and you're dreaming of that next stage of the family.
Yeah.
But post that, there's often not a lot of like focus or discussion
around it. It's kind of like the end point is the baby coming into the world, isn't it?
That's absolutely
all. It's where your focus sort of stops, is just get this child out.
Yeah. And that is you then within your family system effectively creating or needing to create room for another relationship, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Like, you're going from that couple to now all of a sudden being a 3 or a 4 or a 5 or whatever number we're welcoming in.
Yeah.
And therefore every single relationship then needs to be restructured. Your relationship with your partner, your relationship with yourself.
It's a big one.
Yes. All of those go through an adjustment and a transition phase. And so simple, there's logistical things that can be discussed, like, what if we run into financial hardship? How are we going to manage it?
Yep.
How will we change the way that we split the household chores when Bub arrives?
Yep. God, I wish I'd thought of that. Even just the household chores. Jared and I, before we had Kennedy, never had this discussion. And it very much was, I became this new mum, but I was expected to do that on top of everything else I was already doing. if we'd had that discussion before, maybe it would have been more that we were on the same page.
Yes.
With what I was expecting, what he was expecting, what I needed, what he needed.
Absolutely. And I think that it's not necessarily that you need to solve the problem before the baby comes along.
Okay.
But it's just about actually having that conversation.
Being aware.
So that then when you're living it, you can circle back to it and go, I know I said this, but I'm actually finding this now. It's more, right. I guess, conscious.
So keep it fluid.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
How do you, I mean, I suppose it's different for everyone, but do you suggest sort of maybe sitting down as a couple, coming up with your list of things that you think might be really affected and altered? And having that discussion then, because I suppose everyone's list of what they think they need to talk about is going to be different, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd probably be looking fairly holistically at your life now and then really trying to, I guess, envision what needs or what things are going to, you know, fall off that list initially or going to be hard for you to manage.
Yep.
And then perhaps start there. But usually it would be things around, you know, your social needs, that health and hygiene kind of needs, which is the cleaning, which is, you know, are you wanting
making
to
sure you have a shower?
Yeah.
Brush your teeth.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know if it's perhaps the conditioning between men and women being different, but I don't find that necessarily males like think about this stuff a lot. So they will like, they tend to.
Look, in my experience, absolutely not. But anyway.
But they tend to struggle with it more. Yeah. They struggle with that conversation, that yeah. picturing of the future of how much of an impact baby's going to be. And
yep.
sometimes that's because for them, they have a bit more certainty. It's often, okay, baby's going to come along. I'll have a couple of weeks off work.
If that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I'll head back to work.
That's so true.
And then you're at home with the baby doing all of the cleaning and cooking. And
the raising of the children.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Taking on another, I think the statistics now show that it's the equivalent to 2 full-time jobs.
Yeah, it is. That's I read that.
Huge.
It's enormous. And you know what? It feels like more.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, when I had Kennedy, it truly felt like a 24/7 job.
I read a study recently where it said that new mums on average get 30 minutes to themselves a day.
Yeah, but then what do we do with that 30 minutes? Because I feel like when I get, and I don't even think I get 30 anymore, but when I do, it's like, okay, well, now I have to tidy up. Now I have to do this. Now I have to fold the washing. I remember days back when I was in my early 20s, and if you had a minute to stop, you could actually stop and tune out and yeah. watch TV or have a nap or switch off, read a book, go for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just keeping up. Like that 30 minutes isn't real time yes. for yourself.
Yeah. yeah. Such an adjustment.
The other thing that I suppose I want to talk about is I found in my early days, and I've always wondered if it's something chemical or whether it's something common,
mm-hmm.
but I really resented Jared to the point that I felt like I hated him because all of this was on me. Is that something that's common or is that because of lack of preparation?
I think it's a bit of both and, you know, often in that adjustment to, well, to motherhood, I guess, if it hasn't been spoken about, then your needs often don't get met. If we think about resentment as a lens, as a feeling, as a, you know, experience, it comes from a neglect of our needs, right? So mm-hmm. I would imagine that underneath most resentment for new mums is because they're not feeling prioritized, they're yeah. not feeling seen, they're not feeling loved, they're not feeling acknowledged, particularly if you've got, say, more of a corporate, a career background, and then perhaps yeah. you've transitioned into this motherhood role, you might be used to being in environments where you get a lot of praise, where you get a lot of feedback. Now all of a sudden your feedback is a crying little blob.
Yeah, that throws up on you all the time.
Yeah, and poos on you and all those yeah. other great things, which is beautiful and you're getting the oxytocin. But if you're not receiving that from your partner in a verbal way, that's a big loss.
Yeah.
So I often find that that's a really common source of the resentment.
Okay.
And that's just in like, you know, a normal adjustment to parenthood where perhaps there isn't any other, you know, complexity in the yeah. couple dynamic.
Yeah. So how do you overcome that? Because I've heard from so many of my girlfriends and even mums on social media that it's so common to resent your partner in those early days of newborn.
I mean, it's definitely the communication piece, taking responsibility for our own needs.
What do you say? Like, I feel like sometimes you can, it's like talking to a brick wall. Hey, I need some help here. Hey, I need some help. Take the bloody bin out.
I think what's often missing in the communication piece though is that vulnerability, softness.
Okay.
So this is really hard for me to bring up. I've been thinking about bringing this up with you for a while. I'm not quite sure how to say this. It's all about how you kind of frame it initially.
But so I don't wait till you get to the point that you scream it in their face.
Yeah, probably not a good idea, Courtney.
That might have been where I went wrong.
This is good feedback, good learning.
Learn from my mistakes, everybody.
And then rather than it being, I need you to take the bins out, it's, I've been feeling really unsupported.
Okay.
Right? So it's you acknowledging your feelings and then can we sit down together to figure out how we can be more of a team?
Okay.
So you're curious about their experience too and you're wanting their input rather than it being a demand.
It's so hard though when you're in that moment as a new mum.
So hard.
To actually think rationally. You know, to be careful with your words. You're usually so tired and so exhausted. And the last thing you want is to even ask for help. You just want people to see that you need it and give it to you.
Yeah. And I think when you were asking that question before, what came to mind for me and what came up was, I wish that it was actually the partners listening to this episode because
really. Well, I'm hoping that maybe.
Yeah.
Like tune in.
Hopefully the responsibility should be on them as well to make sure that mum's really cared for during that time and really supported and, you know, being curious with her as to what would make you feel more supported, what's going to be most helpful. Because often in my experience, the partners, they have good intentions and they feel like they're doing a really good job at supporting them.
Meanwhile, we think that they're rubbish and a total waste of space.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think as well, perhaps there is almost like a social acceptance of the martyr mum.
Right.
Which can be a little bit toxic, to be honest. You know, that mummy wine culture, come home, got to get through the day with the kids sort of thing.
I agree with that.
When really we want to be looking to be more like models as mothers,
absolutely.
Right?
Role models. That's how I personally live every second of every day as a role model to my daughter. Whether she's in front of me or not, my actions are reflective of who I'm raising. So
absolutely. And I think that I'm sure you'll share it throughout these episodes as well, Courtney. There's been some things that you've done to really, you know, step into actualizing your needs and taking ownership of that and how transformational that has been from an emotional perspective for you to claim back, you know, you needing to be in a certain career and challenged in a certain way and, you know, be intellectually stimulated.
It took me losing my marriage for me to do that. And I feel like too many mums make the same mistake that I did, where you give up everything, who you are, your identity, you give it all up for your husband, your children, to become a mum, and you really do forget about yourself. Mm. Or you almost abandon it. I feel like it was sort of, I can't keep living that life because it's not conducive with being a mum. But yet here I am going back to this life and finding out it actually totally is.
Yeah.
What do women need to do to not lose their identities?
Well, that's part of the planning process at the start, isn't it? Is acknowledging that one of those things that has to have some time dedicated for, some intentional activity dedicated to it, despite what stage of new parenthood you are, is that relationship to self. Knowing yourself so well, knowing what lights you up, what stimulates you, what are your unique needs, what are your triggers that make you feel neglected or unsupported. Like, we likely, if we do enough self-exploration, we can discover those things prior to welcoming a new addition to the family.
It almost should be on the list. You know, you get all those lists of what to do to prepare for baby. It really, I love that. Take some time to sit down and think about your needs and what you love and what inspires you, like you said.
Yeah.
And really do some self-reflection so that you know who you are as a person so you know not to lose it.
Absolutely. Because I think that mum more commonly ends up resenting dad, but dad commonly starts resenting the children for the loss in self, right? And it's the same issue. It's that both parties haven't necessarily taken that self-ownership of I'm the only one as an adult that can meet my own needs. It's not up to the other person to do that. It's up to me to make sure that that happens.
Do you think that it's sort of this mummy guilt that gets you as well? Because that's how I felt, that if I maintained my identity and what I was doing, that I would be seen as selfish.
Absolutely. But we can't win, right? Yeah. You don't win if you breastfeed or bottle feed. You don't win if you had a cesarean or if you had a home birth. Like, there's so much judgment in the culture of motherhood, when really I would hope that there's more of these kind of conversations happening that normalize that every experience to this new transition is completely unique
yeah.
and based on your own thoughts, feelings, belief systems, needs. Because one person might not have those same, you know, needs for career
yeah.
as what, you know, another person may have. They might have been wanting to be in this mother role their whole life and been picturing it fulfilling for all of their wildest dreams, but then also full permission that once you get there to change your mind.
That was me. All I wanted more than anything was to be a mom. And I was in a really lucky, unique position where I was supported to be able to stay at home and give up working and focus on being a mom. Mm-hmm. And once I was in it, it was all I ever wanted. I was miserable.
Yeah.
And turns out I needed my career.
Yeah, exactly. But there's often not that permission piece is there for you to yeah. change your mind.
Keeping your expectations fluid.
Yeah. And also, you know, you might know that your needs are, or you have a really strong value for, say, like, I don't know, health and fitness.
Yeah.
And that's a really big thing for your mental health.
I really wish I had that.
Does that exist? but that might be a big thing you do for your mental health, right? If that's you pre-baby, it's unlikely that that part of you is going to change post-baby. That's still going to be incredibly important to you, if not more, as you adjust to the changes in your body. And so then how are you planning to support yourself in that way with having that value actualized?
Because that's 100%, I think, what I thought was going to happen, that I was going to have this baby and all of a sudden I was going to be Betty Crocker and have my checked apron on, baking blueberry muffins every day to welcome the children home and have birds singing on my shoulder. Like, that's genuinely what I pictured was going to happen to me.
How did that work out for you?
It didn't. I hate blueberry yeah. muffins and I'm not very good at baking. So.
But it's about knowing yourself, right? Like, I'm not a craft person, therefore I'm not a craft mum.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of anything worse than sitting down and playing with clag glue and pasting things onto paper. However, I'm very playful and I love the outdoors.
Yep.
So if I'm an active person, can take my kids to the beach, can be outside with them, can feel really lit up. Like, so how, it's almost like, what was I before and how then can I integrate it?
Yeah. I definitely didn't do that. I know that one thing I personally really struggled with was that I lost my sex drive completely.
Yeah.
And this is also something that I feel like every girlfriend that I have spoken to all says the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they really, really struggle and their partner starts to put pressure on them and they feel guilty and it's like, what is this? Why have we gone from having these amazing sex lives? That's how we've made these beautiful babies and become a mum. To not wanting a bar of it.
There's just a really simple scientific explanation that everyone should know, and it's that you end up getting the majority of your oxytocin, so the love hormone, the love yeah. vibe, from the baby.
Stop.
So you
have we're not craving sex because we're getting our needs met through our little bub.
First 6 to 9 months. And then what happens around 9 months? Baby tends to sit up a little bit more.
Doesn't
then
need they start, as many cuddles.
They start to move to more towards walking. But that's been shown consistently in studies. That 6 to 9 month period is so critical.
I never would have thought. I was expecting you to say, well, because you're so tired. And I hear this word touched out all the time.
Yeah, touch fatigue.
Touch fatigue. I was thinking it was going to be one of those. I had no idea that that was actually, it's that simple.
It's a perfectly plausible brain explanation for it. Of course, all of those other things as well, exhaustion.
All come into play.
Fatigue, that, you know, touched out sensation.
Loving your body.
All of that.
Yeah. So this is all well and good that there's an explanation for it,
yeah.
but I don't know too many men that are going to go, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. Or we just will table that. We won't have sex for the next 6 to 9 months. Like, I know most men are there going 6 week checkup. Come on. How do we communicate this?
Well, I think it's about almost like creating a sense of exposure therapy, for want of a better word, to it as well. Because as you mentioned, it's not just the oxytocin component. It is also that touch fatigue. It is also that you're typically very fatigued, very tired during those periods. So I would be recommending then that rather than it kind of being, let's jump back into bed at 6 weeks, that we focus on intimacy in terms of like deeply connecting with each other, talking about our feelings, how are you finding this, having real true conversations with each other. in that 6 week period leading up. And then hopefully there, that will develop more of an intimate connection. You might not have that primal sex drive, but you might have more of a loving feeling. Yes. Okay. Which then would lead to, again, more oxytocin being created.
Right.
The women that I work with tend to reflect that they feel quite forced into sex because that connection isn't there.
Yeah. I felt like it was a chore.
Yeah.
And I avoided it like the plague. I would use every excuse under the sun until it almost got too long that I went, oh, all right, well, I'm just going to have to suck it up and get this done. So yes. He gets off my back for another little while. Yeah. And I hated that.
Awful.
It's horrible because I think having a healthy sex life is so important in your marriage, and probably at the most important time in your life is after you've had a new baby, to maintain that connection with your partner.
Absolutely. But the thing is that women need the connection to feel seen, to feel heard, to feel acknowledged, to want to have sex.
Yeah.
And men need sex to feel connection. There's all of these little incremental changes that you could be doing in between to build yourself up to a state where you're feeling like, you know, intercourse or any form of sex is not feeling so jarring, so confronting. That would likely start with some kind of self-expression of sexuality. So that might be just simply looking at yourself in the mirror naked, or starting to massage yourself with some moisturizer without the mirror. That could even come before that.
Yeah.
But we have to build back up to it, right? Yeah. Like, you don't want a pendulum swing from that one end all the way to the other, because typically what happens then is we get very anxious and we just swing back.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah,
there are actually times in the early days where it was one of those times with Jared where I felt I've just got to tick this box, and we would have had sex and I ended up crying because I felt so overwhelmed.
Yes.
I just was not ready.
Yeah.
And I wish I'd taken those steps to prepare myself a little bit so that I didn't end up, I mean, God, what a mood killer.
Yeah. And awful for you too to feel so, you know, self-abandoning, because, you know, that kind of expression of emotion is clear that you were feeling very exposed and vulnerable you know, in those moments.
I think one of the best things that you gave me to do, and it was sort of in the end days of my marriage, but again, I think it would be really useful. It would have been really useful after having Kennedy, following on from what you're saying about trying to find yourself, and you gave me that list.
Yeah.
And I loved that list.
Mm.
And it was things like that. It was, you know, looking at yourself or touching, you know, not even sexually, but just touching parts of your body, going out and getting some sexy lingerie and wearing that, not for anyone but you.
Yes.
And then there were things on there like putting a slow song on and lighting some candles and slowly dancing around by yourself and reading them on paper. I thought, oh my God, it felt really confronting.
Yeah.
But I was determined to tick them off the list. Mm. And it was huge in me becoming comfortable with myself again.
Yeah. Which are all those little steps in between, aren't they?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's such a build up to get to the main event, so they say, that I think we perhaps sometimes like push ourselves into it too quickly before we're actually ready.
Well, and I suppose in a way, the other thing I remember is viewing myself very differently. You know, I went from this single woman to a mother, and the things that I was interested in doing in the bedroom became different. Things I just wasn't comfortable with anymore because I was a mum.
Yeah, okay.
And I feel like if I had taken that moment to go back and check back in with myself, I don't know, maybe it wouldn't have been like that. I would have been more comfortable, or I would have realized what it was that I wanted now and been able to express that.
Yeah, there would have been that phase of self-exploration. I think that's a really valid reflection.
Yeah. This one I asked because obviously we know that there's more awareness that's coming to postpartum depression. And I asked this because in my own journey, I actually went and I knew something was wrong. I knew I was feeling really, really sad when I had just had Kennedy. And I went to a doctor and I did the healthcare checklist that's absolutely ridiculous, let's be honest. This doctor said to me, "You're not depressed, you're just having a down day." And I wasn't validated in that moment, and I was almost shamed. So I suppose from that moment on for me, mentally, that was my attitude. It was, well, no, I'm not depressed. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm just carrying on, suck it up and move on.
Yeah.
But then later on found out that I'd had postpartum depression for coming up to 2.5 years by that point, and had taken a massive toll on me as a woman, on my relationship with my baby, on my marriage, on my family. What tips have you got for new mums to try and not go down this path? Or if they're feeling like they're going down this path, how to help themselves?
Yeah, the difficult thing, I guess, is that, you know, like any mental illness, it doesn't discriminate. So don't assume because you have been, you know, mentally well for the rest of your life.
That was my problem.
Yeah. Don't identify as somebody with, you know, anxiety or that experiences any kind of, you know, fleeting depressive symptoms, that therefore you will be fine in motherhood.
Yeah.
I think proactively, if you're pregnant now or you're in that, you know, phase of thinking about having another baby, that to link up with a really good GP that specializes in postnatal health.
Okay.
Right? Because GPs get one unit of mental health in their whole degree.
You're joking.
No.
One unit. So what, one semester?
Yes. One semester on mental health. And they're expected to be the gatekeeper to refer on to people like me. Then I think you need to have that holistic team around you. So don't assume that it's not going to happen to you to start with. Yep. And then I guess also getting really educated on what are those common signs and symptoms and sharing that with your partner, share that with your mum, share that with your family so that they can be checking in on you too. Because this isn't so much of a self-awareness conversation. Often when we're in it, it's like we're inside the jar. We're not reading the label. 100%. So it's really more about the system around you knowing the signs and symptoms and when to call out and get you that extra support.
I put on such a brave face because I'd never struggled with any type of mental illness or, like you said, anxiety or anything before this.
Yep.
So to me, I still very much attached that stigma and was so embarrassed that I was struggling. So I just put my mask on. If you're someone like me, when do you know that you're at a point where either you've got to pick up the pieces and go and get yourself help, or you need to express that if no one's noticing?
If you're feeling a bit off and you're in that postnatal period, or even if you're 2 years down the track and you're still not quite finding yourself, will you ever regret going and getting a mental health care plan referral to go and see a psychologist or a therapist? You're not going to regret going to that appointment, right?
Yeah, for sure. And my God, it was the best thing I ever did.
Well, knowing as well that maybe the GP might not be the best person to support you with that, and actually getting somebody who knows a lot about the signs and symptoms to be able to give you a better idea of what's going on with you and put together a support plan to help you is going to be way more productive. I personally feel like every new mother should have access to some kind of psychological support.
Oh my gosh. Do you know how many times I have said that? We take the baby to all these post-birth checkups.
Yes.
Why do we not have ones for mum and her mental health? And I don't mean the midwife comes and just asks you the obligatory question, and how are you?
Yeah.
Someone that's trained to actually read between the lines and know if you're okay or you're not okay, and to help you overcome whether it be birth trauma, whether it be early stages of postnatal depression, identity crisis, or whatever you've got going on. Why do we not have that in place for mums?
Absolutely. I mean, it's such an easy early intervention, isn't it, to prevent longer term problems. And also knowing that it's our role as women, you know, being part of the sisterhood, the mamahood, to support each other.
Yeah.
Check in on your new mum friends. Check in on your new mum colleague. Check in on your new mum acquaintance and normalize this experience.
Yeah.
Like, rather than just, hey, how's it going?
Yeah.
Like, really specific questions like, oh, in my experience, I was finding this, like, or do you think that this could be true for you? Like, don't be fearful
of asking those questions.
Yeah, to be really quite direct with this stuff, because you might just be that conversation
they need to have
that changes that woman's life and is the catalyst for her going and getting some actual support.
Yeah, God, that's such good advice, because that's so true.
If in doubt, don't hesitate to reach out. If that professional support option or seeing your GP feels a little bit stretchy, you can access somewhere like the Gidget Foundation. They've got free support for postnatal mums where you can just talk to someone through text. You know,
that's amazing.
You've got baby sleeping on you, you can text a counsellor.
So that's just an online service?
Yeah, they've got a range of different online support options, like groups that you can attend anonymously if wow. that confidentiality is a big thing for you, as well as, you know, text support lines, phone support lines, nothing that you have to commit to ongoing. But just if you're needing
just
that
you need someone.
Top up, yeah, or someone just to check in with and go, is this normal?
That's incredible. I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, well, they've got it from like a child health perspective, right? We all call child health in the middle of the night and
that's
like,
true.
What's going on with my baby? Do I need to take it to hospital or not? Like, it makes sense to me that there'd be a mental health option as well for
Absolutely.
New mums. I think actually they do cater for all mums, really. They don't discriminate.
I think that's important as well. And talking about being more than just a mum, it's not just being a new mum. Like, this is the pressures of being a mum just continue, don't they?
You know, absolutely.
Things. Yeah. I keep hearing that if you find it hard at 2, wait until she's 12. Wait until she's this age. Mm. It's just sort of the pressures of being a mum are never ending.
Yeah.
So I think that's the other important thing is that don't stop checking on your mum friends just because they don't have the newborn.
Yes.
Keep checking on them.
Yes, because the challenges shift, don't they?
Yeah. And even, you know, the most that I've had people check in on me have been when my marriage ended. But it shouldn't have to take that, should it? And I'm no different. This is sort of a hindsight thing for me too. I should be doing the same thing because I don't think I check in on my girlfriends.
Yeah.
I just sort of expect they're cruising along and their kids are grown up. They've got this handled now. You know, their kids are 4 and 6. They know what they're doing. I don't need to check.
I mean, I don't want it to sound too clinical, but, you know, having even just a reminder in your phone to send that text every single week, like that can be really helpful, right?
Just
like just
checking.
To create that culture of support.
I love that.
Yeah.
How amazing would it be if we did just take 2 seconds to check in on somebody else? I know I'd love it.
Yeah,
I'm going to make it my mission. I'm going to make it my mission, Monique. After this, I'm going to send all my girlfriends a message and I'm going to check in regularly and make sure that they're okay. I love that idea.
Well, if you're one of Courtney's girlfriends and you don't get a message, you're going to be feeling really neglected now. But it can be so simple, Kanan, and I guess it is just acknowledging the busyness of adding another plus full-time role into your life. There's going to be things that will get missed. There's going to be things that will become lower on the priority list.
Yeah.
But I really think that the conversation needs to be broader than just what one-to-one individual support for mums. It needs to, you know, spread to how can we actually support each other collectively as women through this transition.
Bring that village back. That village disappeared. And I think it's so important.
Yeah. And that's a big part, I think, of how we're experiencing motherhood today as well.
It's so isolating.
Yeah. We've lost the village, haven't we? We've lost the stories being passed down the generations.
Totally.
That wisdom isn't there collectively anymore. So we're trying to do it on our own.
Yeah. Dr. Google. Yeah. All the win. Connecting through Instagram, all these healthy ways that we've got to become mums now. Well, that I think is amazing advice. And like I said, I've been so excited to get you on here because you have truly helped me so much, not just navigating a marriage breakdown, but finding myself and since becoming a mum. And I just think that's huge. And I really, really want more women to learn from what I went through and the help you gave me and hopefully be able to do the same thing. So thank you for coming on.
Oh, you're so welcome, Courtney. It's such a beautiful gift you're sharing.
Next week on More Than Just a Mum, I'm answering the questions that you've asked me on mum life, marriage, and everything in between.